We're going to talk about them in this order: asthma, chronic bronchitis, and emphysema. All right, asthma. Asthma is an acute, intermittent, or chronic disease. It can occur at any age. It is most common in children. About 50% of new onset comes on in children. Now, what does that tell you? If 50% of new onset is in children, the other 50% must be in adults. So even though it is most common in children, it happens to adults too. So you can get it later in life. I know that's terrible, but that's the way it is. Mortality is declining, which means that we are better at treating people from it. But the incidence, the number of new cases, is increasing. Now, some of that is just because we're better at diagnosing it. But some of it is because there's just more of it around. Now, why is there more of it around? Smoking is on the decline. Pollution? Actually, you know, if you look at LA, Atlanta, New York, Chicago, any of those big cities, their air is cleaner now than it was 20 years ago. Obesity? Yeah, we're not quite sure why, but we know that more people are getting it, but we're better at treating it, so fewer people die. Now, it is a familial disease. It runs in families. There is a genetic component. There's also an environmental component, perhaps. There's multiple genes involved, and these are some of the genes that affect these things, influence asthma. I'm not going to ask you to remember this. I want you to remember that it's a familial disease. That's it. Risk factors include allergen exposure, urban. People who live in cities are more likely to get it than people who live in the country. Smoke pollution, cigarette smoke, hygiene, and that's it. So people who smoke or people who live in families that smoke are more likely to get this disease. Yeah, it's really interesting when you work in a clinic and you have a kid who comes in with an asthma attack like every month. And he smokes. And you're like, and he has migraines. So when you give him the treatment for the breathing, it triggers a migraine. Yeah. Anyway, I guess some people like the pain when they bang their head against the wall. All right, now, asthma classification. The older schema was based on underlying pathophysiology. The newer schema is based on severity of illness. And although now it seems like we're moving back to an older schema of lung function, not just symptoms. So the symptomology can be considered mild intermittent, which means it just happens every now and then, but when it happens, it's not that bad. Then we can have mild persistent. You have the symptoms a lot, but they're still not that bad. Moderate persistent. You have the symptoms a lot, and they're kind of bad. And then severe persistent. You go to the hospital every other day. Not every other day, but quite often. All right, so mild intermittent. You must remember the rule of twos. So symptoms of cough, wheezing, or chest tightness, or difficulty breathing, less than twice a week. Wake up with nighttime symptoms, less than twice a month. Refill your inhaler, less than twice a year. If you have more than two of any one of those, you are no longer mild intermittent. You are now mild persistent. Mild persistent. Yeah. So if a person is less than two on each one of these, then they're considered mild intermittent. If they're greater than two on any one, they're considered mild persistent. So you need to remember the rule of twos. Now, flare-ups are brief, but intensity can vary. So even though you might have a flare that puts you in the hospital, as long as you still are within this rule of twos, you're still mild intermittent. Lung function tests. Now, this FEV1, forced expiratory volume in 1 second. So it's how much air can you blow out in 1 second? It's a measurement of flow. And what we use is we use percent of normal or percent of predicted value. So if we know that you're a 12-year-old kid and you're this height, we predict that you should be able to have an FEV1 of this amount. If you're below 70% of that, then you're considered abnormal. So we have two things. We have symptoms, and then we also have lung function. So symptoms and lung function. I'm not going to make you know all of the different lung functions because you don't really need to know those at this stage of the game. If you specialize in peds, then you might want to learn them. The other thing we can look at is peak flow value, which is just the maximum velocity of air that you can breathe out. Peak flow is less than 20% variability from morning to night. So in the morning, you wake up, you go, and you see your maximum velocity of air. You do it again before you go to bed. If you have 20% variability within those numbers, that's another sign that you're not mild, intermittent. All right, asthma pathophysiology. It's an inflammatory disease, and it's a type 1 hypersensitivity reaction. It's histamine related, and what you're going to get is you're going to get bronchial hyperresponsivity. So the bronchi become super responsive. And the reason for that is IgE, which is an antibody. Now, remember, what does IgE do? It gets produced by plasma cells, and then it inserts itself into mast cells. It inserts itself into mast cells. The next time pollen or dust or whatever activates it comes along and activates it, the mast cell degranulates, releasing large amounts of histamine, which attracts the eosinophils. Eosinophils come to the area and cause even more inflammation. Now, in the airway, what are the three things that inflammation does? Bronchoconstriction. So the muscles tighten up, not as much airflow. What's the second thing that happens? Edema, swelling. So you've got a narrowed airway, and now it's going to become edematous, so it's going to narrow even more. What's the third thing? Mucus. So you've got a narrowed airway, which then becomes thicker, narrowing it further, and then you fill up what's left with mucus. So the patient has a very difficult time breathing. And pictures, yay. I think you've already seen this one, haven't you? You should have. Allergens, the first thing we get is we get allergens activating, which eventually activate our B cell, becomes a plasma cell, releases the IgEs. The IgEs then insert themselves into the mast cell. The mast cell degranulates the next time you get the allergen coming back over, which releases histamine into the area. You get an inflammatory response. What's not on the slide is the eosinophil, which comes along. But here you have mucus. Yay for mucus. All right. So, inflammatory response. First thing is bronchospasm. The second thing is airway edema. The third thing is mucus production. Now, those are the big three. You're also going to get impaired mucociliary function. So those little cilia that crowd surf the pollen and bacteria and dust back up don't work as well, which means that when you breathe particles in, they tend to stay down there, which can lead to increased infections. You're also going to get a thickening of the airway walls over time. This is a progressive damage. It's kind of like a scarring of the airway walls. You're going to get muscarinic stimulation, which is going to cause increased acetylcholine activity, which is going to cause constriction and mucus. And then eventually, you'll get epithelial destruction by the eosinophils destroying the lining of the bronchi, which will be replaced with scar tissue. So here we have a normal bronchi. Notice it's a nice big open space in there. Here we have a diseased one. It's been squeezed a little bit, so it's smaller. And then this is thicker, so it's edematous, and then it's filled up with mucus. So now you have a very small lumen or inner part. The end result is airway obstruction. Airway obstruction makes it harder for a person to breathe in and out. So they are going to feel short of breath, and they are going to, when you put a stethoscope up to them, wheeze. The impaired blood flow, the impaired airflow, if it goes on long enough uncorrected, will eventually cause hyperinflation of the lungs. Typically in asthma, we can treat people, they don't get this problem, but it can happen if you don't treat it. Patient is going to hyperventilate. You know, they're going to try and breathe faster and harder. It'll cause decreased perfusion, which will cause uneven VQ, so eventually the patient will become hypoxemic. Now, this is usually your untreated patient. Patient who doesn't get treated will start to have hyperinflation, low oxygen levels. Here's just another diagram of the constriction and the mucus and all that stuff. All right. Okay. Now, what we would like to see is for the patient to go into full remission, which means they get completely better. For now, anyway. The patient will be asymptomatic and have normal function tests. So what were the three function tests we mentioned earlier? Only two. FEV1 and peak flow. Now, there's some others, too, but those are the two that we're going to talk about for right now. We want them to have normal, no symptoms, and normal function. Partial remission, the patient is going to be asymptomatic, but their PFTs will still be abnormal. Now, the problem with that is that even though the person feels fine, guess what's going on in their body? Inflammation and destruction. Now, if the patient keeps having inflammation and destruction, what will happen over time? Okay. How many of you have ever been behind a truck on the highway when it loses a tire? Anyone? I mean, the truck's going along fine, and then all of a sudden, it's like, boom, 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 and like this black stuff starts getting flung all over the road, and you think you're going to die because it's going to crash into your car. Any of you? Okay. All right, so a person who's asymptomatic but is having destruction is kind of like that truck. That truck was going along fine. It didn't have any symptoms, but it was having damage done to its tire until eventually the tire blew out. So the patient who's asymptomatic but has underlying damage will eventually have a flare of asthma. The asthma attack itself. We can have two types of asthma attacks. Slow onset and hyperacute, which means like it just like out of nowhere, bam. But most attacks are what we call slow onset, and they build, and then get bad. So the slow onset usually happens over a matter of days. The patient's getting worse, and then they have the flare. Now, why don't they go get help while they're getting worse? Because they don't know they're getting worse. Because remember, the damage is being done, but they're still asymptomatic. Now, can we detect that person and treat them early? We can. And the easiest way to do that every day, what should that asthma patient do? Do their peak flow. If they do their peak flow every day, they'll start to see that their peak flow is going down, 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 down. And they should go to the doctor and say, look, I'm going to get a flare. Here's my peak flow values. Doctor can treat them and prevent the flare from happening. But that's usually not what happens. What usually happens is they don't do their peak flow because it's a waste of time anyway. And then they get a flare, they end up going to the emergency room. It's quite common after upper respiratory infections. Then we have the hyperacute. These are usually triggered by either stress or exercise or allergies, and these can happen within minutes to hours. This one is very difficult to detect with the peak flow, but it's also not as common. All right, the attack itself, signs and symptoms. We already talked about dyspnea and wheezing. We talked about, well, if you're having less airflow, what sounds are there are going to be decreased in volume, so it'll be harder to hear. Peak flow will be low early in the attack. Now, if the O2 sat is less than 90, you want to get a blood gas to see if they're having hypercapnia as well. Very early on, they'll have a non-productive cough because all that mucus is trapped down in those constricted bronchi. The patient will have tachycardia, tachypnea, and they'll be using their accessory muscles like crazy, trying to get air in. Once it starts resolving, they'll start coughing up thick, stringy mucus. Yum. Okay, so evaluation and treatment. The person who's got asthma, you want to do spirometry on them. Spirometry is several different pulmonary function tests, but including FEV1 and the peak flow. Patients with asthma will have decreased FEV1 and decreased forced vital capacity. They will have increased forced respiratory capacity and total lung capacity. So basically, their lungs are getting bigger, but they can't use it by breathing out. Daily peak flow, they need to record it every day. Who here has asthma? Does he record his peak flows?
Yeah, he has peak.
Good job. I just asked you if he did, and you said he did. Yeah. Okay. Treatment. Number one, avoid triggers. Okay, so what's a common food that can cause asthma trigger? Shellfish, perhaps? What's the number one? Peanuts. Okay, foods that cause a patient to trigger their asthma, even if they love them, need to not take them, not eat them. Airborne particles, cat dander, dog dander, dust, smoke, whatever it is, etc. Now, so what we want to do is we want to asthma-proof the house. Get rid of carpets, vacuum regularly, and say again? What?
Drugs.
Well, yes, drugs. But in the get rid of carpets, vacuum regularly, you also want to use a particle filter. How many of you change your own air conditioning filters? Okay. How many of you use the blue one? The blue spun glass? Stop using that. That's worthless. All it does is keep rodents out. Literally. What you need to get is you need to get a micron filter. You don't need to get the super good one, but you do need at least a pleated micron filter. They have different ratings. You can get a rating of like 4 or 6 would be fine for most people. But if someone has asthma in the household, you're going to want to go with a higher rating. And you want to change it monthly for the person who's got asthma, every 3 months for someone who doesn't have respiratory illnesses. Number one thing you can do to make sure that you have a healthy household in terms of breathing, change that filter, use a good filter. All right, and also carpets are disgusting. How many of you have no carpets in your house? And what you notice is that like every couple weeks there's these enormous dust bunnies that kind of swirl around and you got to sweep them up and, you know. Now, if you had a carpet, guess what? You wouldn't see them, but they would still be there. And how many of us really vacuum our carpets every week? And then the last thing we can do to treat asthma is drugs. We'll talk about drugs in a lot more detail, but for now, for the acute treatment, you're going to give oxygen dilator, bronchodilators, drugs that will open up their airway, and if it's bad, steroids. Hospitalization if necessary. For chronic treatment, you're going to give inflammatory reducers, you're going to give bronchodilators, and you're also going to try and reduce mucus. This one, less so. Now, status asthmaticus. What do we say status asthmaticus was? It's a severe asthma attack that does not respond to normal treatment, and the patient has been having it for how long? Well, it doesn't say on there, but 20 to 30 minutes, depending on the source. So it's life-threatening, and what's the treatment? What is the treatment for status asthmaticus? Epinephrine. Epinephrine how? Subcutaneous. All right, and that's it for asthma. Yay! All right, we'll pick up with chronic bronchitis tomorrow.